Chris Sulowitz, you've written significant biographies of Bob Marley and Joe Strummer. Why Jimmy Page, I suppose, is the obvious question as your next target.
Why Jimmy Page? Because I just think he's the kind of greatest archetype of an English rock and roll star there is. And also, I was kind of felt I was guided to do this when I had a dream whilst in Los Angeles that said, write the Jimmy Page book. So I thought I should obey these instructions. Mm. I don't know, it's something Jimmy would understand, as a matter of fact.
Well, we could get onto that, can't we? He has certain interests in that area, should we say?
I'm interested in metaphysics, but I'm sure not as to the esoteric extent that he is. But those things always interest me, and I consider it like the poetry of life.
He's enigmatic, an enigma. Is it hard to kind of try to drill down to the facts about his biography and his life and his upbringing when so much about Jimmy Page is almost mythical and he tries to keep it like that? How do you get to the facts of who he is and where's he from?
I think you can, you know, there are kind of specific facts that you can look at, you know, where he's from, you know, where what he did, you know, his career choices. But I think you kind of look at, you know, the course of his existence. And I think, you know, I mean, a lot of people have this image of Jimmy Page as a dark figure. I think that's slightly manipulated as part, maybe not by him, as, you know, as part of the myth of Led Zeppelin. Although I have to say that, you know, Peter Grant would say that he would take Jimmy Page into the offices of Atlantic Records in New York and women would hide from him in case something
happened. That happens to me as well, for different reasons.
Yeah, well, obviously. But I think, actually, he was just, as many people of his age were, you know, he was interested in metaphysics and followed that kind of course. You know, he's not, you know, I mean, he, for example, his love of Aleister Crowley was so, the Beatles had a similar love of Aleister Crowley. You know, Crowley is featured on the cover of Sgt. Pepper.
Yeah, indeed, yeah.
You know, so, you know, it was just a kind of zeitgeist thing. And I think he was kind of plugged into that. And I think he found it very interesting. And I think it's also part of the fact that Jimmy Page is kind of a pure artist. And, you know, his training, although he, you know, he had his time as a session musician, highly successful time. Apparently he was earning three times as much as, you know, most session players. And I think that taught him very much, you know, how to produce records. I think he learned from that very much. But equally, you know, he'd had a time as, you know, as an on the road musician, he then went back to art school. You know, and you know, Jimmy Page and Eric Clapton and Jeff Beck all grew up within, you know, a radius of about 12, 13 miles of each other.
It's amazing, isn't
it? You know, it's amazing. Although someone said to me recently, well, the reason they're such great players is because it's so boring living there. but that's a matter. However, they all went to art school. They all went to art school. And I think that art school training is absolutely integral to understanding Jimmy Page.
Why Jimmy Page? Why not Led Zeppelin? What about him made you want to single him out?
Because I think as an individual, you know, he's absolutely fascinating. I mean, you know, people will quibble about this, but to me, Led Zeppelin is Jimmy Page. It's like, it's his art project. He started it, you know, it's his thing. And I really mean that as his art project. You know, it's like, it's something that he consciously set out to create. He knew, he had that vision in his mind, you know, and, you know, it's the time of kind of conceptual art, you know, so, you know, he likes painting, you know, he's a great admirer of the arts and crafts, for example. And, you know, I know he was at the previews for the Edward Burne-Jones exhibition, which is on at the Tate Modern in London at the moment. But, you know, he just... Led Zeppelin is his project. Nice. You know, it's him, basically, you know.
Well, because he did explain it to Keith Moon, famously, didn't he?
Exactly. And he started, you know, Led Zeppelin sort of comes out of that time in the summer of 1966 when he and Jeff Beck recorded Beck's Bolero with Keith Moon on drums, Paul Jones, interestingly enough, on bass.
No, really?
Because he's a mate, pulled in. Nicky Hopkins on keyboards. And, you know, it was it's the B-side of Hi Ho Silver Lining. Very, very different song. But it's like the first intimations of the supergroup that Led Zeppelin would become.
Because they did come out of the new Yardbirds, didn't they?
And they came out and he was in the... Yeah, at that point, he was just about to join the Yardbirds. Mm. You know, he hadn't caught, you know, it's like within weeks...
Days
almost, you know, and he becomes the key figure, you know, in the last days of the Yardbirds, who were not really playing in this country, in the UK, very much at all, but they were still a big act in the United States. And when Jeff Beck kind of flips out on a tour in Los Angeles, it's Jimmy Page, who was already playing dual guitar with Jeff Beck. The only recorded version of that is in Antonioni's film Blow Up.
Yeah.
But where actually Beck is fairly dominant. But you see Jimmy Page looking kind of almost angelic, actually. You know, as Beck's going mad.
Yeah.
But he takes over from Jeff Beck in that group, and as they're touring in America at that stage, he comprehends with Peter Grant as the manager, who becomes Led Zeppelin's manager, he comprehends how the underground scene is building in America in a way that is not even kind of really glimpsed of in the UK.
Yeah.
And he sort of sees the market that is existing, and you know this, you know, the readiness to accept, you know, kind of Cream paved the way, really, but Axel kind of play long solos, you know, kind of blues based material. He understands that America is ready for this.
I want to ask you about your process, because I know that you spent time on the road with Joe Strummer, and you lived in the Caribbean. How do you go about putting this together? Did you see Led Zeppelin live?
Do you
have material with Jimmy Page?
Yeah.
How did it work?
Yeah. Well, I saw Led Zeppelin, I only saw them three times, actually. But I saw them at different periods in their career. I saw them first when the second album had just come out at Leeds University. It's either the end of January or beginning of February, 1970. Well, I thought they're absolutely sensational. I thought their record was tremendous. But I thought the live performance...
The heaviest one, isn't it, I think, probably?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. And they played for, you know, must have played for about 3 hours. And I specifically remember this, and I loved Eddie Cochran. You know, they did this encore of Eddie Cochran numbers. It was just sensational. I mean, it wasn't just Page, it's like Plant. I'd never seen Plant before. He was fantastic, man. He was fantastic. The whole group was fantastic. You know, it's one of the best gigs I'd ever been to, and still would stand out for that. And I saw them at when they played Alexander Palace, the Christmas show. What is it? Is it end of 70? No, it's end of 72, I think, isn't it? When Robert Plant notoriously after the show gives his Christmas present to the road crew, which is a bottle of scotch between them, but that's another matter. also fantastic show, and really exciting, you know. And I remember going to probably a Christmas party afterwards. Yeah, it was a Christmas party where there were kind of a number of people I'd already met by then. I was just starting to write about music. There's some people from Sounds and maybe NME, and people were quite derisive of Led Zeppelin, you know. People were snobbish about Led Zeppelin. To this day, I know people who will say, slightly embarrassedly, oh yeah, I went to the Bath Festival, but I left before Led Zeppelin came on. You know, there was kind of there was a certain cool in that, you know, because Led Zeppelin was seen as, oh yeah, they're just a sellout, man. You know, they're just like, they're a capitalist group. Well, they'd just gone out and got a great deal, that was all. I mean, it's complete nonsense. But really, people did, you know, denigrate them in those terms, because they'd just gone to America. Well, they'd gone to America because, you know, Page had sussed, and Grant had sussed out what the audience, you know, there was an audience for them there. And they'd be kind of playing to, you know, 5,000 people or 3,000 people or whatever on those early American tours, and they'd come back and they'd be playing, you know, some pub in Plymouth for 140 quid, you know, and it took not that long, but it didn't build straight away in the United Kingdom. And then I saw them at Earl's Court, the Physical Graffiti tour, which was sensational.
Yeah, yeah.
It was absolutely fabulous.
My favourite album.
And
of all
Physical
time.
Graffiti is such a great album, you know.
Of textures, we've talked about the textures on the album.
You know, it's a beautiful record.
Yeah.
You know, all the way through. I mean, it's a double album, the packaging, everything. Mm. And the artwork was always, you know, and therefore I would return to Jimmy Page's art school background.
Mm.
The artwork was integral to the work and the look. Always, you know, that's why, you know, again, why did I write this book? It's not just like Jimmy Page is as a musician. You know, he's the archetypal English rock and roll star. There's no one like him, you know. I know there's Keith Richard and Paul McCartney still, you know, kind of like representative of kind of the great English, you know, rock and rollers. But in a way, the whole image of Jimmy Page, the way he looked right from the start, you know, the crimped hair, the kind of the velvet suits. I mean, the only other person who could have rivaled him was Brian Jones, who was a friend of his. Interestingly, because the Rolling Stones allegedly didn't like Brian Jones, but Jimmy Page saw the value in him and worked on that. One of the last things that Brian Jones effectively did was the soundtrack to the film Degree of Murder, which Jimmy Page worked on him with.
Right.
So, you know, there's. I'm just making the link between these two archetypal, you know, English rock and rollers. And Page just looked fantastic.
It's that kind of rock god.
He's a rock god.
He's a rock.
Absolutely.
Paul McCartney's a fantastic.
But he doesn't look like a rock.
He's not a rock
not now,
god.
Especially now.
Like almost mythical
but
character.
But even in the 70s, he did, you know, at the time, which is the same time that Led Zeppelin are touring, Paul McCartney, who I think is fantastic, doesn't look like, exactly as you say, doesn't look like a rock god. He has a dodgy mullet from Star.
So, what's your connection to Jimmy Page? Have you spent time with him? Have you talked to him? What's his contribution to this
book?
I've
interviewed him. He's not got a contribution to this book, really. But, I mean, you know, I did two very long interviews with him, and I felt I had some understanding. I felt I had some soul connection, to be honest.
And have you used that content in the... Right.
Yeah. And it was kind of different state. Well, they're kind of a link. Well, obviously, it's all linked, but, you know, it was. I interviewed him for an American magazine called Gig, which doesn't exist anymore, unsurprisingly, but in the beginning of 77, before you might describe it as the fatal American tour, when kind of Led Zeppelin never tour America again after what goes on it. And I interviewed him just before Nebworth, when again they're trying to revive their career. Nebworth is a success, but it's still. I mean, he didn't seem in a very good state, that's all I'll
say,
you know, and he obviously wasn't in a good state, you know, he was kind of like, there are addictions of all sorts going on.
So, in a way, do you think...
But he would justify, you know, he did a famous interview with Nick Kent, who was on the NME, in which he said, and Ken asked him if he regretted, you know, his heroin use, and he says, no, it got me through the work.
Right.
So, you know, he has a perspective on it, and almost an intellectual perspective on it.
I mean, do you think the death of John Bonham was a kind of provided a neat place then to go, okay, let's leave it?
You can almost think like that, can't you? I mean, when, you know, there's hindsight that permits one to think like that. But I think there's a certain truth in that, because it's sort of slightly run its course. You know, it's like, it's 1980, and they were the biggest, you know, people slightly forget, and let's not forget, right now is the 50th anniversary of Led Zeppelin, their first dates. They haven't even released their first record at this point, but they were the biggest group in the 1970s worldwide, globally the biggest group. There's absolutely no question of that. And kind of, in a bit, similarly to the way the Beatles ended in 1970, having been the biggest group of the 60s. You know, there are parallels. You know, I mean, it's tragic, obviously. But, you know, they came to an end at the end of the 70s, really. It's like their job was done.
Yeah, and the 80s would be about a lot of different things, but not really that...
Yeah, exactly.
..that kind of rock scene anymore.
Exactly, it's changed. Yeah. Exactly.
There are a lot of myths surrounding Jimmy Page, surround the band, a lot of kind of lurid stories. Were you interested in those? Were you able to confirm them, or was it more about debunking?
He wasn't involved in the shark incident.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So were you interested in kind of like clarifying what he did and what he didn't do and what never happened?
Yeah, and then a lot of the time he wasn't around. The stuff that went on, he wasn't involved, actually.
Yeah.
You know, there's a side to Jimmy Page that's kind of quiet, sensitive soul. Yeah. You know, he's the hermit, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, you know, the hermit character on the sleeve of the fourth album, the unnamed, untitled album, sometimes called Zozo, but not by everyone, is kind of very representative of him, that to the tarot card figure. You know, the lone, rather aloof man with the light, trying to shine a light on the world.
And what's your understanding of the state of the band now? I mean, obviously three of them are alive. Are they are they working?
I understand that there was a meeting of all three of them in Warner Brothers at the beginning of I think it was this year. But clearly nothing has happened as a result. You know, nothing has really happened.
Because the reunion, the Ahmet Ertegun reunion, was supposed to sort of launch them back into maybe doing something.
Yeah, but Robert Plant was apparently not interested. And there seems to be stuff between Robert Plant and Jimmy Page.
Yeah, it's funny, the frontman and the guitarist.
No, because he's Robert Plant was 19 when Led Zeppelin are first touring America. He's a kid. You know, I'm sure those first dates were absolutely terrifying. And he was like the neophyte, and then but he's also interested in some of the same areas as Jimmy Page, and so, you know, the warrior priest, who is kind of like the warrior high priest, really, who is Jimmy Page, then finds he has, you know, someone coming along almost sort of wanting to usurp his place.
Yeah.
I think after the tragedy, you know, the death of his son Carrick, you know, which ended the 1977 American tour, I think that Robert Plant stepped back from the whole business of Led Zeppelin. Although he still performed, read the form, make records, he did step back.
I've seen Page and Plant. I mean, they did occasional gigs with Page and Plant.
And they very, you know, the Page and Plant tours of the mid-90s, they were the financially most successful tours that they'd ever done. They made much more money than Led Zeppelin ever did.
Right. I'm really interested to hear you talk about it as an art project. And do you think now the main interest of Jimmy Page is in curating what happened protecting that legacy?
Yes, Jimmy Page is interested in his legacy. And I believe that's part of the tradition of, you know, someone who... someone in the occultist tradition, you know, looking after the work, making sure it's seen in the highest possible light, and that's what he's been doing. And I think that's what interests him. Because, I mean, frankly, you know, he did that record Outrider, and was it 88? It's not very good.
No,
it's very disappointing.
I've got a signed copy of that, by the way.
Oh, good.
I found it in a second-hand record store, signed by Jimmy Page.
Wow,
they had no idea.
Wow. And you know, he did those two records and tours with Paul Rodgers, the Firm. Sorry, you know, this is like, you know, you if you love Jimmy Page and his work, you don't really want to hear that stuff, to be honest. It's just not up to standard.
This whole thing,
being rude, it's not, you know.
No, the whole idea about the occult and the crossroads, the Clarksdale crossroads, and you make your pact with the, you know, with the guy.
Yeah, but that's the Robert Johnson thing, and I think actually, with regard to Robert Johnson, where he's supposed to have sold his soul to the devil at the crossroads. I just think, to be honest, it's racist nonsense, actually.
Right.
having studied Robert Johnson and written something about him, I just think it's real nonsense.
27.
However, Robert Plant is alleged to carry a pouch of earth from that crossroads.
Oh, really? So
everyone's maybe hedging their bets, you know.
So just to end, I suppose, I mean, how long do you did you take putting this together? When's it out?
It's out now.
HarperCollins.
Photography, HarperCollins.
All good bookshops.
We hope. Certainly on Amazon. Big hit on it. Bestseller. Amazon bestseller. Number one music biography.
Mm.
It took me about 2.5 to 3 years.
Wow.
I still haven't recovered.
It's true. And do you think JP's got a copy? Will he be... You could not, could you? You'd have to have a look, wouldn't you?
That.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Great, Simon. Thank you.